Okay, it is now my privilege to introduce tonight's speaker. And our speaker is Pat B. from Fresno. And his go-to saying is, trust God, clean house, and help others.
Thank you, everybody. My name's Pat. I am an alcoholic. I wish I had about five, so.
All right, okay.
Oh, man. I'd like to welcome everybody. It's new. Everybody took a chip tonight. Congratulations. I never wanted to be congratulated for failing at anything, but if you failed at being, not being able to handle your liquor and you end up here, I think it's a pretty good thing. I know it was for me. First of all, I'd like to thank Bill for asking me to speak. It's always an honor and a privilege to speak, do anything for Alcoholics Anonymous. Saved my life. I'd like to thank Grass for taking me and my lovely wife to dinner. This is my wife right here, Michelle B. And if you're here next week, you can hear her side of the story. Yeah, rebuttal. I have a sobriety date. It was God-given. I didn't plan on getting sober on this day, but it just happened. It's November 6th, 1997, and I have a home group. My home group is Life on Life's Terms in Fresno, California, 710 Fulton. I am in service at that fellowship. I currently hold a position as a chairman. Have been a treasurer, off and on bathroom cleaner and parking lot sweeper, and I love it there. And it's kind of a low bottom meeting. It was a offshoot from the ODAC Club, and the ODAC Club was in this horrible little building over on Tulare Street back in the 90s. And the ODAC Club at that time, I don't think the walls had ever seen a coat of paint, and they were brown with nicotine stains, and you could smoke in there. At the time, and I remember I was kind of new, and I walked in there, was at the meeting, and there was this guy there smoking cigarettes, snorting snuff, and chewing tobacco all at once. And that same guy wrote the most profound thing I've ever seen on a bathroom wall, and it was in and what it said was, please do not throw your cigarette butts in the urinal. It gets them wet and makes them hard to light. And Rodney died of emphysema a few years back, but he was a longtime member there. I'd like to say that I came into this program on November 6, 1997, and that was my first time getting here, but that wouldn't be the truth. I initially came in 1987, and at that time, from 85 to 87, I was living on the streets of Fresno in my car, frequented Motel Drive a lot, and I used to be a burglar and a forger, and I never was a robber because I always thought that I was, not a violent criminal. I just, I was a victimless criminal, and that's what I thought. But I did a lot of burglaries and stuff. But I ended up in 1987 at my first meeting, and I had no idea that I could live my life sober because I'd taken a drink or some other outside issue nonstop from the time I was 16 to the time I was 29. I never knew a day sober. I don't even remember most of that decade, my 20s. I don't remember most of it. It was like a blackout. But I know I got in a lot of trouble because I got a police record to prove it. I ended up in 1987 coming there, and I heard people who were just like me, the shared stories of places that I'd been, shared stories of places that I hadn't been yet, but I was going, and I didn't know it. But I heard these people talking about living a sober life, and it floored me. I had no idea that it was possible because I always, the alcoholic life was the only normal life for me, and that's the only life I knew. And so when I saw that, it gave me a lot of hope. And I got me a sponsor to get you guys off my back, because everybody said that, you know, when you come in here, you got to get a sponsor. And for 11 months, I was going to meetings. Didn't like going to meetings, but I was going to meetings. And I'd talk to my sponsor once in a while. Most of the time, I would dodge him. But I took what I wanted and left the rest. And you may hear that in these rooms. And what I'm going to tell you is, that's not written in this book anywhere. It's not written in here. This is not like Hometown Buffet, you know, where you can pick and choose what you want. And I didn't know that. So for 10 years, I bounced in and out of the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. 11 months, I needed to drink real bad. And I was 11 months without a drink, and I wasn't treating my alcoholism, and I picked a fight with the girlfriend that I was living with at the time, and I went and bought a 12-pack of beer, and I took off on a route that I had on the eastern side of the Sierras, and I crawled in the back of that route truck, and I drank the 12-pack and passed out, and that started it all over for me again, I couldn't stop, you know. And what happened was, I ended up going to Madera, California, with some stolen checks they were stolen checks, and I had them. I didn't steal them, but I had some stolen checks, and I was writing them. I was cashing them. And I'm not a real bright criminal, I'm gonna tell you right now, because I was using my own driver's license, and I thought, well, they'll never find me because I don't have a house. I live in my car. 1974 Mercury Capri was my address. So I end up going in there on the night before Thanksgiving, 1989, this night, you know, I don't know how many, 24 years ago? Yeah, 24 years ago. On the night before Thanksgiving, I went into this Madera food market, and I had made myself a payroll check from this construction company check that I had, and everything went real good. I cashed it. They gave me the change back for my check, but I bought Thanksgiving, you know, fixings and turkey and all that. I didn't have an oven to cook it in, but I bought it all just to make it look good. And I ended up going back to my motel room on Blackstone Reps Motel, and I ended up partying the whole night through. And the next day, I remember leaving that store that afternoon, that Thanksgiving afternoon, a day before Thanksgiving, and there was a sign near the door that said, "We'll be open Thanksgiving Day for your convenience." And I thought, that's a good idea. I'll go back to the same store because they already cashed one of my checks, and the banks will be closed because it's a holiday. You know, I was having a lot of I was doing a lot of brainstorming on how I could do this, and I went in there and did all the shopping again, got another turkey and all the basketball, you know, and when I got up to the register, they said, Mr. Barnett, we know that these checks are stolen. We're going to hold you for the police, and I said, you're not holding me for anybody. I'm walking out of here, and like I said, I don't think I'm a violent person, but I had a .25 automatic in my pocket, and I pulled it out and I pointed it right at the assistant store manager, who was about 6'2" and weighed about 350 pounds. And I told him, I'm walking out of here, and I pointed the gun at him, and he was either stupid or knew I wouldn't shoot him, and he rushed me. And we ended up getting in this tussle. We ended up going over some dog food and some rock salt sacks that were in front of the plate glass windows in the front of the store. We went through that plate glass window my face first, and we were out in the parking lot tussling around, and next thing I know, these guys were beating me on the back of the head with a shotgun. Cops come up, beat me on the head with a billy club, knock my teeth out, and I ended up in the hospital that night. And I remember, after being exposed to this program, I remembered that, like, I'm an alcoholic, and I asked God for some help in that jail cell that night. And he helped me, you know. God helped me. He didn't get me out of there right away, but I got out eventually on my own recognizance, and I was able to I was able to get out and you know, let people know that I was wrong for what I did. I'd actually stolen some money from the fellowship that I was the treasurer to, and I went back to that group and made some amends and let people know that I was in trouble and I was probably going to prison, and I did. I went to prison. I got sentenced to 3 years state prison, and when I went down there, I did my time at CRC. I was scared. You know, I'd been to jail before, but I thought, you know, this is the big house, and you know, I'm going to be in trouble. I'm kind of small. I'm white, and I'm cute, and you know, it's not a good mix when you're in jail. And so what happened was, you know, I went down there, and there was Alcoholics Anonymous in there, and I got involved with Alcoholics Anonymous, and I was the sergeant at arms for Alcoholics Anonymous, and there was also some other 12-step meetings. So I got to service with them also, and I was the vice chairman for that group. And all that meant was that I got to make the coffee for the meeting. And we didn't give me any juice. I mean, I got a juice card. I got a little card that let me, you know, travel through the different sections. But more than anything, you know, I mean, I did it because I wanted to stay sober. I wanted to get sober. And I actually, you know, got to meet a lot of really nice people down there on H&I. And they did a four-step workshop for us. So I got to do my first four-step. And got to do my first fifth-step on the yard at CRC. And, you know, they told us while we're in there, we should get a temporary sponsor, you know, because, you know, we'll be needing one to hear this fifth step. And so there was a guy that was in there, and he was a part of AA. I didn't know, you know, he wasn't in my dorm area, but he said that when he was arrested, he said his name was, he told the judge that his name was Zoltar, and he was from the planet Romulac, and he was in women's clothes when he told the judge that. And I thought, that's going to be my sponsor, you know, and because if he did that kind of shit, I could tell him anything, right? And I did. And I did my first fifth step on the yard on one Sunday morning. And when I walked back in my housing after that fifth step, I felt like I was floating. I had a spiritual experience there. And actually, when I walked in to that room, the guy that I went down there with, he was sitting on his bunk. And as I walked through the door, his eyes got like a deer in headlights. He got huge. He was looking at me like something was wrong with me. And he goes, "You're glowing." I felt the presence of God in a prison yard, and that was my start. And now I'd like to say I got sober. I stayed sober for 4 years when I got out of there. I did a lot of the stuff they suggested. I got a sponsor. I was going to a lot of meetings. I even started sponsoring somebody. My very first sponsee his name was Jack Daniels, and no joke. And he's still sober today. Not any, you know. I'm not taking credit for it. It's he's working a good program. But the thing was, I found it necessary to drink after 4 years because I wasn't treating my alcoholism. See, going to meetings is going to meetings. It's the fellowship, you know, and it's a place for me to share with you what miracle had taken place in my life that allowed me to stay sober, and the work that I do today to maintain that. But I wasn't treating it. So at 4 years, I found it necessary to take a drink, and I wasn't able to stop for a couple months. You know, being around this program, you know, people know you. You go anywhere I go anywhere in Fresno, I see people in the program everywhere. I mean, they either work at the store I'm at, or you see them on the street, or, you know, they're at the gym. They're everywhere. And so you can't hide from us. If you're new and you're thinking about ducking out of here, you will be found. And that's what happened. Somebody found me and got me back to the program. During that time, though, that was in 1995, and I actually had a plan to get sober again because I'd already paid for some World Convention tickets. Now, a World Conference of Alcoholics Anonymous is huge. They have them in major cities. The main meetings are always held at a football stadium or a big stadium. And I went down to, I had already bought the tickets for San Diego before I relapsed, so I figured I might as well go down there and get sober because I was still drinking. And I went down there drunk, and I'm going to tell you, going to a World Convention of Alcoholics Anonymous drunk is no fun at all. You know, I felt like the loneliest person there. And the girl that I was with, she was also drinking, and it was a horrible time. But anyway, when I got back, you know, to Fresno, I got honest with my sponsor. I showed up at the morning maintenance meeting. There's a meeting in Fresno called Morning Maintenance. It's a lot of some of the people here know. But I went to that meeting, and my sponsor at the time was Andy P. And I pulled him out of the side, and I went over to the garbage can, and you know, me and him did a little ceremony and said goodbye to my last bit of gin that I had in a gin bottle in my trunk. And I thought I was done. I stayed sober for a little while longer, and I drank again. And what I was missing, you know, the book says that you know, that what we have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of his spiritual condition. And I was praying, you know, I mean, I would do the little prayers and thank God at night for being sober and all that, and ask God in the morning for courage and strength, but I really didn't get into the book yet. I had been around AA for 10 years, and I actually hadn't even really studied this book. I thought you just read the first 164 pages. I didn't know you had to digest it, you know. So after I had relapsed after 1995, the last relapse prior to 1997, I had ended up, during that time, I mean, during those 10 years, a lot of good things happened to me. I had periods of sobriety where I was able to get a job. I was going to college. I was working full-time. I was going to school full-time. I was trying to maintain a marriage and kids and all that. And it was insanity. You know, I created so much craziness in my own life that I hated my life. And so I drank, and I wasn't able to stop, and I'd go to meetings drunk, and I was also prescribed some Vicodin because I had they told me I had a chronic degenerative disc disease problem, and that I'd probably be in a wheelchair in a couple years, and so they kept giving me these pills, and I kept buying their bullshit, and so what happened was, I started drinking around July that year, and come November I'm still drinking, daily drinking, and taking all these pills, and I couldn't stop, and I knew I couldn't stop, and I couldn't feel God in the meetings anymore. I'd go to meetings and I'd whine, you know how I'd, because that last time I relapsed, I got kicked out of my house, and I'd tell some old timer that I got kicked out of my house and I lost my wife, and they'd laugh and say, "You didn't lose her, you traded her for a drink." And I thought, that's not very compassionate, you know. Where's your sensitivity, you know? I've got feelings, you know. And so what happened was, I ended up going back to this. I got me a room at the it's really nice motel on Motel Drive. I was in the penthouse suite on the third floor, I think it was. Wasn't right through third or fourth floor of the penthouse suite up there. It was the Welcome Inn on Motel Drive. And I think it was, they gave me a weekly rate of like 19 a night. And I was up there drinking as much as I could drink, and I wasn't able to drink much at the time because I also had a liver disease that has since been cured. But I when I drank, my liver got really swollen, and I could only drink so much and then I'd throw up. But the thing was, I was drinking as much as I could drink. I was taking as many pills and I was doing a bunch of other outside issues, and I was praying to God to help me. And I thought, you know, I didn't know nothing would happen. A lot of times I pray and I don't know that God's really listening, but I pray because that's what you say to do, right? I'm praying for help, and one morning, was it morning or night, Ray? One night, I get a knock on the door, and I'm thinking it's the cops, you know, because usually when I drink, cops show up, but it wasn't the cops. I hear this knock on the door, and I answer the door, and Reyes is standing outside the door, and I didn't tell him I was there. Nobody knew where I was. But Reyes, he goes looking for people, and I thank God he did that day, because I was in that motel room drinking to die, and he showed up and he said, "What happened?" And I told him the truth. I said I'm in a relapse and I can't stop, and you know what he said next, I'd never experienced for the 10 years that I was around Alcoholics Anonymous. And what he said next was, "Come to my house and I'll help you." And I had some, I had a bunch of pills left and I had a little bit of alcohol left, so I told him I'd be by tomorrow. And I did. I finished them, and I was done. And I went to his house, and he put me in a spare room. He had a partner at the time both of them were so giving and so loving, you know. And he put me in a spare room, and I laid there, and shook there, and head was aching, you know. I was seeing stuff. And Ray would come and you know, he'd take care of me. You know, I couldn't eat much, and I was throwing up whatever I ate. But I was really kind of getting urge for Lucky Charms, and I don't know why, but I told Ray that, and he went and got me some Lucky Charms, you know, and brought them. I wish he had had almond milk in those days. I think that regular cow's milk is what upset my stomach so much, but I'm glad that you got the Lucky Charms. And he helped me, man, and when I was like, I couldn't move, I was in so much physical pain, he would encourage me to get in a hot bath, and I never knew that would help, but it helped, man. I got in a hot bath, and it helped, and like on that third day of me detoxing there, it was the worst detox I've ever been through, and he even took me to the hospital one time, because he thought I was going to stroke out. On the third day of that detox, I was praying out loud, and I didn't know anybody was even in the house, because I would go in and out of it, you know, and I puked in this wastebasket that he set next to the bed, and I crawled out of bed on my knees, and I was looking out this window on a cold, foggy November night, and I was praying out loud, God, please let me die. I don't want to live anymore. Life is too painful. And I didn't know he was back there, but Ray was standing in the doorway, and he burst out into laughter. And he started laughing, you know. And if anybody knows Ray, you know how he laughs. It's a kind of a high-pitched, like, giggle, you know. And he laughed, and you know, and I heard him laugh, and I couldn't figure out, you know, if he was laughing at me, because there was nothing in that room funny, man. I wasn't laughing. I know that. Pity, you know, oozing from every pore. And I don't know where he got these words. But he told me something that killed the old me and prepared a new me to awaken. And what he said was, Pat, you're not going to die. He said, you're going to live so that you can do for somebody else what I'm doing for you. And that was those words are what saved my life. I mean, his kindness and his, you know, taking me in was also instrumental. But I'd been around the program for 10 years. And like I said, I really didn't study the book. I'd go to big book studies, but I never sat down with a sponsor, never really understood where the steps were in the big book. And I don't know if you're new or if any of you ever read the big book. They don't say, here's how you work step one. Here's how you work step two. So I'd never done that, so I didn't get the benefits of it. And so what happened was, after I'd gotten, you know, well enough to be able to walk on my own and leave that house, I started going to meetings. And I'd go to 3 and 4 meetings a day. And I was going to Fresno State at the time. Since I'd missed so much school, I got a note from my doctor that let me, you know, drop that semester with no penalty, which was really nice, because I had missed, I'd gone to school from 92 all the way to 2002. And for 10 years, I went to school part time, but I went every semester. I never missed a semester, and that semester I missed. So I was going to a lot of meetings, and I didn't have a sponsor yet, because I always got, I mean, every time I relapse, I, you know, if you're like me, you'll get a new sponsor, because it's got to be their fault. So I didn't have a sponsor yet. I went to that morning meeting, and there was a guy there who had a story similar to my own, and ended up on Motel Drive. And the guy's name was Howdy, and I thought that was a corny name for somebody, Howdy, you know, like Howdy Doody, but his name was Howard Collins, and he didn't ask me to, you know, he didn't ask to help me, I didn't ask him to help me, but there was an old guy there by the name of Jack, and Jack says, you got to get this guy to take you through the steps, and I did, and I just let him, you know, do it, you know, let him guide me, and after that meeting, that first day with that sponsor, I made a point. Because I knew those first 10 years I was half measuring. I knew it. I knew that I wasn't doing as much as I could do for Alcoholics Anonymous, and the results were I kept getting drunk. Yeah, I knew it. And so when I got this sponsor and he agreed to take me through the steps, I sat, when I pulled out of that parking lot, I sat at Shaw and Palm at that parking lot, at that light, and I prayed out loud to God. I said, God, please let me learn as much as I can, not for me, so that I can, you know, live a happy, sober life, but let me learn enough about this program through this sponsor so that I can pass it on to somebody else, because I know that there's somebody else out there that probably deserves it a whole lot better than I do. Because when I came in this program, I hated me. For the way my life had turned out, for the way my family had turned out, so what happened was, I made God a deal. I told him I'd do everything that my sponsor asked me to do for 1 year, and if things didn't change after that year, I told him that I was going to, I told God, so I was threatening God, you know, I told him I was going to go to every AA meeting that I could find and tell you are all full of shit because it didn't work for me. About 3 months after having that sponsor, promises started coming true for me. About 3 months after that, that meeting, that sponsor, the wife, I was married at the time, she had filed for divorce, and I began to know a new freedom and a new happiness. And so I was free to work this program. I was free to do everything that I wanted to do whenever I wanted to do it, and that's what I did. And I threw myself into actively being an active member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And in that first year, I think I probably picked up 7 sponsees. And I was taking 7 sponsees through the steps. And we were having meetings at my house every Wednesday night after the 8 o'clock meeting. And we would stay up at my house till midnight, and we'd study this book. And I'd take these guys through the steps, just like my sponsor took me through the steps. And life was getting really good for me. And then I met wife number 3. But things got going really good for me. I got a job. I was still going to college, and I was working the program, and had my own little apartment. I had a little girl that I had part time, and I was taking care of her, and things were going really good. And so what happened was, after all that serenity, I just couldn't take it anymore, and so I met wife number 3, and I ended up, treating that wife like my sponsor told me to treat her. He told me to treat her with love and respect and kindness, and I tried to do that, and things weren't working out. The home front wasn't that happy, and I don't know why I didn't know this, but I was at a Sunday morning meeting, and there's a lady, some of you may know her, some of you don't. If you don't, I hope you get a chance to meet her. Her name's Carol M. But she had a good buddy in those days, a running buddy. Her name was Dottie. And Dottie had these big, thick Coke bottle glasses. And, people told me, when you don't know what to do, ask somebody in AA, because somebody's gone through the same thing. Probably somebody's gone through a similar experience, and maybe they can share their experience with you, and you'll be able to solve your problem. So I pulled Dottie aside one morning at this morning meeting, and I said, Dottie, this marriage isn't working out. And I said, I don't know what to do, she looked at me, and she said, why don't you leave her? And I thought, you can do that? I didn't know you could just leave people or just walk away from a bad, relationship. I didn't know it. I thought there had to be some. I thought maybe I had to go to counseling, right? $65 an hour. But it wasn't working out. And Dottie told me that that's sometimes what we need to do. And so I did. Things were good after that. Things were starting to smooth out again. And all this time, I've been going to meetings. I go to meetings still every day almost. I work downtown Fresno, and I don't go to meetings because I'm afraid I'm going to drink. I go to meetings because my life depends on me helping you. And if I don't put myself in a place where you can see me, there's a good chance that I'm not going to be able to help you. And so what I do is I go to that meeting every day at noon, and I look for people who are new and looking for a way out. And that has been my saving grace. I'm going to tell you, some days I hate Ray for saving my life because when he told me that I could help other people, that's what this is. I've been given a gift, and only an alcoholic can help another alcoholic. In these last, by the way, I just turned 18. So in these last 18 years, I have sponsored over 150 men and women in this program. And I used to say I have a 100% success rate. And the more I thought about that, I thought I sounded a little arrogant. But the 100% success rate is me. I haven't drank. All the people that I've sponsored, some of them are sober, some of them are not. Some of them are dead. I had a sponsee one time that spoke, that did a speaker meeting like I'm doing here, on a Friday night at the home group in Fresno. He was having some relationship issues. And after that speaker meeting, he went to his apartment, back to his apartment, and he hung himself. This kid was only 27 years old. And he took his own life because he didn't see any way out. But the thing is, what has happened is every one of these people, you know, that I have sponsored have saved my life. You see, because the reason why I'm sober today is by the grace of God. But without me getting me out of the way long enough for God to do His work on me, I'd be drunk. And it has happened in spite of me, because I have, you know, been notorious for sabotaging my own life. And, you know, and it's a process. I haven't had to drink in a long, long time. And I haven't had to take any illegal mind or mood altering substances in a long time. I do want to admit, though, to you guys tonight that I look forward to my colonoscopy every 5 years, because they give you something called propofol and it knocks you out, man. It's instant blackout. So I look forward to that, but I'm not going to give up my sober time. But you know, it's by the grace of God. I found tools to use here that have saved my life, you know, and it's been amazing. And so, you know, I've experienced a lot of tragedies this year. There has been so many people dying, you know, around me. Maybe it's my age, you know, maybe because I'm getting older. I don't know. Maybe it's just because I know, you know, a lot of people nowadays. But about a month ago, a lifetime friend of mine and a good friend of my wife's, she sat on the railroad tracks in Fresno, behind the Fresno Fellowship meeting, and she let a train hit her, you know. And day before yesterday, and you might have seen this on the news, a guy was found up at Balch Camp. His name was Rodney Camp. He used to be a sponsee of mine. He was at the memorial for that girl, and they found him dead in his car up at Balch Camp a couple days ago. I figured he OD'd, because he'd been struggling. But so many people, you know, come and go, you know, through it all, I haven't found it necessary to drink. I used to drink all the time when somebody died. I thought that was a good opportunity. It was a good excuse to drink, or a good opportunity to drink. Not that I needed one. My rule was I only would drink on days that ended in Y, and that was it. I held it to that. The rest of the days I left alone, and never before noon. I have been able to stay sober, and not only that, I've been able to be happy. You know, that was one thing that I drank for. I drank to be happy. I drank to enjoy life, you know, and I couldn't imagine coming here and not drinking and being miserable. And Alcoholics Anonymous has filled my plate to the max. I have got no time on any day to do anything, really. I'm busy. Me and my wife, we're busy every day. And, you know, and I love to watch TV. I don't get to watch much TV because of it, you know. But I get to go a lot of places. I get to do a lot of things. For the new people, I got to wrap this up at 8, right? Or 7:50. Okay. Got to wrap this up. So to some of the new people, I was never somebody who would go out of town. I mean, I would stay, you know, right near where I live. Because one thing, I couldn't afford it. But what Alcoholics Anonymous has allowed me to do is I've been able to go all over this country, to meetings all over this country. I've been to every world convention. The last four world conventions, they happen every 5 years, the last four world conventions I've been to sober. And that's a really lot nicer. So it was nice. I got to take my wife this last one in Atlanta, Georgia. And it was beautiful, man. You know, I'm going to tell you, Alcoholics Anonymous is a very, very big organization. And worldwide, I mean, it's amazing to be a part of this, you know. It's like spiritual Amway or something. I think they should give awards, though, you know, for something. But you know, I'm able to go to conferences. I'm able to travel. We kind of made it a tradition to go to State Line. There's a retreat in Las Vegas. We're gonna get to go. We're gonna get to go again this year and experience that and see some fantastic speakers and enjoy life, man. That's what it's all about for me, is enjoying life. Because if I didn't have fun. My sponsor told me, when my second wife divorced me, he told me, he goes, you didn't get sober to be miserable. And that's what I did. When that relationship ended, it was a relief to hear that, because I really wasn't that happy in the relationship anyway. The marriage wasn't working. But you know, when that all ended, he's like, you know, we got sober to be happy. We got sober to be a part of our families, a part of our community, a part of our jobs. So what has happened to me is I've been able to do that. I've been able, every one of those promises, and there's more than 12 promises in the book, I've been able to experience every one of them. I still read the book. I study the book once a week. I have a meeting once a week with everybody that I sponsor. And I couldn't tell you exactly how many right now are currently working. I'm working with through the steps, but we have a meeting on Tuesday night where that's all we do is we read this book. We study this book using a study guide from the Primary Purpose Group out of Dallas, Texas. And we use that guide and we study this book every Tuesday night. And that meeting has gone anywhere from, you know, from 10 people on up to 30 people. And it's always filled on Tuesday night with guys that I sponsor, the guys that they, you know, the guys that they sponsor and the guys that they sponsor. And it's an amazing thing. And we learn a lot about this program and we have a lot of support. You know, we are able to be, have an accountability group is what it is. But I'm a, when I came in here tonight, I was thinking about, you know, past Thanksgivings, and they're never going to be the same as when my grandmother was alive and my mom was alive. You know, Thanksgiving used to mean something. We used to have like a little family thing, and I'm starting to get into that with my wife now, because her family's, my gosh, they're like always at each other's houses and, you know, talking to each other. I'm not used to that. My family's, you know, very spread out, but like I was thinking about the Thanksgivings that I'd had past, and I already shared one with you in 1989 when I was going to jail. I actually ended up in jail on Thanksgiving. But I spent a lot of time in jail, and I've been out now and sober for a lot of Thanksgivings, you know, and it's nice not to have to eat rolled turkey, something, whatever it is. They roll that turkey, you know, in jail, and they try to pass it off as turkey. But it's nice to not have to eat that, and more importantly, it's nice to be able to be with my family rather than wishing that I could be with them, you know. And I love the holidays. I love this time of year. I don't know. If you're new, I hope you heard something. All I know is that when I came here, I had to put this program before anything else. The book talks about it being the number one priority. If I don't, I lose it. So inside this book right here, my sponsor had me write up a list of priorities. And he told me I could use this. If I had to make a decision about what to do sometimes, he goes, refer to your list. He goes, because your number one priority is your sobriety. He goes, and with that, you know, your sobriety will give you a God in your life. So it's God in your sobriety, number one. And then he said, you know, then your job. And then third is your family. You see, I grew up thinking and hearing that your family always had to come first, right? Family's first. And to me, that never worked. I tried to put my family first. I stopped drinking a dozen times for my family, and it never worked. Because, you know, somebody had pissed me off, of course, and off I'd be. But then they said the family, and then friends, and then like hobbies and stuff. And I asked him why it's in that order, and he said, well, without God, AA, and working with others, he goes, you wouldn't have a job. He goes, did you have a job when you weren't doing God, AA, and working with others? I said, no, I didn't have a job, and nobody would hire me even if I wanted a job. And he said, okay, well, that's why jobs after that. And then he said, he goes, and your family. He goes, if you don't have a job bringing home a paycheck, how are you going to take care of your family? You know, and he was right. My family was always taking care of me. I was always moving back home to mom's or grandma's or some in somebody else's house. And I haven't had to do that for a long time. So, you know, these priorities really help, you know, me to make decisions today. I live in constant expectation of guidance from the God you guys gave me. And on most days, he gives me good advice. He gives me good direction. And some days, not so good. Some days I take my own direction, and it's always better when I take God's direction. But I'm really grateful to be here. I'm pretty sure I'm out of time. Thank you guys for listening to me, and happy Thanksgiving.